Hello and welcome back to the Ice World podcast. My name's Louis Day. You may recognise my voice from Series 3, Episode 1, where I discussed life as a boating officer at Rotherhithe Research Station. I'm currently stationed here at King Edward Point in South Georgia as the boating officer and the deputy station leader. Today is a very exciting episode and one I've been looking forward to recording for a long time now. Sat opposite me, in the hot seat, is the usual host of this Ice World podcast. Having double wintered at Rotherhithe and now at King Edward Point as a marine biologist, Nadia Frontier. How are you feeling sat in the hot seat?
I actually feel a little bit apprehensive. I like being the one asking questions, so I'm excited for what's to come.
It's terrifying, isn't it? So, first question really, how long have you worked for BAS now?
I started working with the British Antarctic Survey in August 2020, so coming up to 4 years now.
4 years. And with a double winter and now here at King Edward Point, you spent a lot of that south.
Yeah, so it probably will be a total of 3 years in Antarctica by the time I come out of King Edward Point.
So the first trip south was a double winter. Did you know you were going to double winter before you went?
No, I didn't. I did, when I was doing my research part of the British Antarctic Survey, I did see that people used to be there for 24 months. One of my diving supervisors at Plymouth University told me at the time where that was the standard and now it was only 18 months. And I actually remember feeling a little bit disappointed, but no, I didn't. And then I was in my first winter, came onto Rotherhithe Research Station for the first time in December 2020. And then by May, my line manager had said to me, Nadia, do you want to double winter? And I literally remember wanting to reply to his email, like instantly saying yes. And then my office mate said to me, yeah, you probably should take a little bit of time to think about that. And then I spoke to my parents just to check that they were happy. But I was definitely set on wanting to stay.
And is that something that marine biologists do as standard as part of the job, or is that personal to you?
So in terms of the marine biologist job at Rotherhithe specifically, it's quite individual in the sense that you conduct your own project and it takes a long time to get familiar with the sites, to understand the species, to know different methodologies, to be really comfortable with Antarctic logistics, that to actually pull off a project and get really good data takes a hell of a lot of training. So there's a massive benefit by staying longer.
Did you go into your second winter feeling more prepared because you've done it before? Or did you go into it feeling more fatigued?
So really fortunate for me, I actually had what they called a sanity break, which is quite funny, between the two winters. So I had a total of 2 months away from Rotherhithe by the time I had gone back to the UK and then come back to the Falkland Islands to quarantine for 2 weeks to then come back to Rotherhithe. So having that breakaway was super refreshing and just gave me this really nice perspective of that I've got such a lovely community of friends at home. But I remember that in that time I was just thinking about Antarctica and talking about Antarctica and just actually wanting to be back in Antarctica and actually having severe fear of missing out because it was Christmas then in Antarctica and there was like New Year celebrations. And I remember speaking to my old team that were wintering. Yeah, I just actually really wanted to be there. So then I came back for the second winter and I felt even more excited because I knew what I was coming into and I felt like so much more confident and so much more prepared. So I was so eager to meet a new team, but I hadn't actually met that new team before. Like I didn't know any of them at all, actually. So it was all a whole completely new bunch of people. But I was so excited to have that enthusiasm that new people bring and to see that in a new team. So it was different.
So marine biologist at Rotherhithe, you double wintered, you were there for a very long time. Would you like to give us a recap of all the science projects that you were involved in?
Well, Lee, I'm so glad you asked that question because that is a massive question and it's definitely something that I've had to explain so many times. So I think I've hopefully nailed it down to a T now. So working in the Biodiversity, Evolution and Adaptations team, which is headed by Lloyd Peck at British Antarctic Survey headquarters in Cambridge. So in summary, I looked at my main project was looking at the breakdown rates and degradation of Antarctic seaweed known as detritus. Detritus is formed as a result of icebergs scouring across the sea floor, dislodging seaweed communities or from the natural senescence as the seaweed dies. It breaks away from how it's attached onto the bedrock by its holdfast and then accumulates in these pits, sometimes in iceberg scours, and it forms these like novel ecosystems that are, I say novel because they're not really talked about that much. Like it's quite a new thing that these there's really quite a spotlight on like this detritus, this almost what we inadvertently would say dead material. But actually we found out from a lot of research that this material is still photosynthetically active. It's still fixing carbon dioxide. It's still a food resource for lots of different invertebrates that use different techniques rather than eating live material, but more scavenging, feeding, making the most of the Antarctic seaweed as the chemical compounds break down as it starts to degrade. So basically, tracked the fate of this material from degrading seaweed in a food web using a stable isotope approach was my main core project. And then with yourself in my then second winter and your first winter, we both became ROV pilots and essentially collected invertebrate life across a depth gradient in Antarctica to represent 5 years growth and loads of questions about competition, colonization, depth differentiation can be answered from those samples.
You mentioned the ROV there. What other methods did you use to collect that data?
Yeah, so in addition to using a remote operated vehicle, an ROV, to collect the sediment panels, a lot of the data from the seaweed project that I was talking about was installed and collected over multiple time series via scuba diving. So in order to dive in Antarctica, we dive under scientific licenses and we have full face masks that we can use to communicate to the surface, which we can use to relay data about organisms that we're seeing, for example, if we need the surface to write something down, if we need them to deploy an instrument like a light sensor from the boat, we can talk with them. And it's like a kind of whole operation where it's not just the divers, it's also the person that's driving the boat and working really hard to keep either the tether for the divers or the tether for something like an instrument that's being deployed off the boat to then go to the divers. And then it's also the diving supervisor who's managing the whole operation.
Had you done any diving like it before?
Nothing as cold. I did a short internship when I finished university with Alfred Wegener Institute. So they are an Arctic logistics provider. Also, they work in Antarctica too, but a lot of the work that I was helping on was Arctic logistics on a remote island in the north of Germany called Helgoland. And the coldest dive I did when I was there on Helgoland was 4 degrees. So I do remember it being quite a shock and I had some really thick gloves. So that was my slight insight into it. But otherwise, the scientific diving I had done prior to that was in Plymouth in the UK and then in Brittany in France, the west of France. So the sea temperatures never really dropped below 8 degrees. But in terms of survey techniques, using quadrats, using transects, using photography, collecting samples, working with quite dexterous things underwater, deploying experiments, I had got experience of that before.
How did you feel coming home from Rothera when you first got home after such a long period of time in Antarctica? How did that affect you? How did you feel?
I left Antarctica in March 2023. So that's 2.5 years after I first went there after, yeah, 2 winters. I was pretty tired. I remember coming out and being in a hotel room in Punta Arenas, and that's where we landed just after the Dash 7 aircraft took us to Punta Arenas. And I remember just the first thing I did was get into bed and just sleep. And I remember then waking up after this like 5-hour nap and I was like, oh, wow. Like I looked out my window and I thought, I looked out onto the sea and I was like, I can literally just go to the beach and swim in that water because obviously in Antarctica, like it's so cold. You can't do that. There's a risk of leopard seals. Everything's super controlled. You'd have to tag out to say that you were going to walk to the Antarctic beach. But I was like, I don't have a radio that I need to carry around with me. I don't have a tag I need to put anymore. It was the weirdest feeling. I guess almost like, I don't want to say freedom because I don't feel like I was restricted ever in Antarctica, but it was this release of coming back into the normal world that was quite strange.
You then went on to work in Cambridge for the next 12 months. What were you doing in Cambridge?
I had 2.5 years of essentially doing predominantly field work, from diving to typing up data to running laboratory experiments. at Rothera that I didn't really have a huge amount of time that I could dedicate to writing a manuscript. And that's the form of how a published paper starts. So you basically compile all of your data together in this really succinct format. You're reading loads of papers, making this really like nice introduction and discussion to summarize your results. So that was a massive part of what I was doing in Cambridge, was like having that real focus time to be able to consolidate and write and interpret everything that I'd just collected.
How did you find that after spending so long working in the field to then going into the lab? How did you find that?
I was absolutely dreading it. I really thought, wow, what a contrast it's going to be living this crazy life where you see the beautiful scenery of mountains. You've got this like amazing community around you. If you're feeling like at a bit of a loose end, then you can just go into the kitchen and there's always like some carrots or potatoes to peel. You know, on the weekend, you're putting your boat suit on and you're going to get ready to potentially act as search and rescue for an aircraft that's landing. Or maybe you'll go on a plane with a pilot and go to a remote fuel station and you need to help with a military airdrop. Or like, there is just ample opportunities. You get back into the real world. And almost what I found was the weirdest was being consumed by like all these plans, all these people that you had kind of like hadn't seen for years, then arranging things like weddings and birthday parties and like holidays and whatever. And now suddenly I could like actually attend these things, and like moving around the country and travelling was so time consuming. At Rothera, the furthest you need to walk to go and see your friends is like 5 minutes. So that was definitely weird.
Tell me what a day in the life of a marine biologist at Rothera Research Station looks like.
Okay, so let's start with summer. In summer, it's light for 24 hours. So the night before, I've probably been snowboarding until like 11 p.m. And then I'll come in and I'll be so excited that I almost can't sleep. And then I'll go to sleep and then I'll probably wake up at 7. I'll go and get some breakfast from the dining room where there'll be loads of people because it's summer. And if I'm lucky, there'll be some fresh fruit and the chefs would have made some yogurt. So that's a super cool way to start the day. I might even, if I'm feeling really energetic and the weather's nice, go for a run on the runway. And then I'll make my way down to the dive store, and that's where we have a boat brief at 8:30 in the morning, where there'll be visiting scientists, there'll be the boating officers, there'll be the diving officers, there'll be everyone that's involved that wants to potentially conduct a marine operation that day. We'll make a plan. Generally, that'll be led by the diving officer or the Bonner lab manager. And then we'll go out on the boats and we will do a dive or go to the islands or take some water sample measurements using some instrumentation to continue part of the long-term time series. Depending on what kind of work happens, there might be samples to then process in the laboratory. There might be data to upload from some kind of instrumentation that you've used underwater. Maybe we've collected live animals from under the water that we would then need to transfer immediately into the flow through aquarium to keep the animals at ambient water temperature. We'll also then unload the boat. So the boating officer will then come up with the boat. We'll be standing there ready to greet them at the end of the dive store, pick off all the dive gear and then wash it all down because it's salty water. We need to clean it with fresh water. We'll then get changed and then often be absolutely ravenous and so ready for lunch after quite a like busy and active morning. And then if the weather's good, the same thing will probably be repeated in the afternoon. And then if we're not out doing some kind of boating or diving operation, someone might then be doing the aeroplane cover, like I talked about. And then the day will often finish with typing up data, replying to emails that you haven't really had time to sit down in the chair, looking at the forecast for tomorrow and making a plan for the subsequent day, preparing equipment that you need for a diving operation. And then by the time it rolls round, it's dinner. And then you have dinner. And then depending on the evening, you might go and join knit club. You might go and join Spanish club. Or you might actually just want to chill or go for a walk with your friends or go for a snowboard or a ski. I don't know why you'd want to ski though, because snowboarding is better. But a range of activities could happen. And then the day will repeat again.
What is your favourite highlight from your time at Rothera? If you had to pick one.
I think a particular memorable moment was in my first winter when there was a group of five of us and we had just said goodbye to the sun on station for the last day. And then that weekend we went up to one of the mountains called Stork Bowl and we climbed up like higher than the elevation of station and we could see the sun again. And it was almost like our secondary goodbye to the sun. And I remember looking at the sun and thinking, we're not going to see you for 60 days. And then we had this like amazing ski back down. And then we made an igloo, like a proper igloo that could fit 5 people in it. And it was just one of those moments where you almost don't quite believe that it's real life.
Tell me about your favourite diving memory from Antarctica.
I'm going to be really cliche and say that it was probably my first proper dive where I had a lot of anticipation towards it because I'd read about Antarctic ecosystems, I'd looked at pictures of them, I'd read about the species that occupy these underwater habitats, and then this was the first time that I'd actually seen them come to life. And then once we reached the bottom, I was just hit by this forest of sea cucumbers. And I kid you not, there were like carpets and carpets of them. Like, I'd never, ever seen that before. And I've seen sea cucumbers in the UK and in France and in temperate waters. And they're quite sparsely distributed. Like, maybe you'd be lucky to see 3 on an hour dive, let's say. But this was like, they were absolutely everywhere. And it was summer. It was like the height of summer. I think this dive was in January. Productivity is in full swing. The water's pretty green. They all had their tentacles outstretched and they were feeding. And then I came across these giant anemones. And I was like, this is like, it was like a complete other world. And it felt so euphoric. As I moved past the bigger soft-bodied animals, I was looking at these like large sea spiders that were crawling above them. And then I was looking at these mats of like, worm nets that would like covered the carpets of sea cucumbers, and I could see like, I started to see some seaweed as well, and it just got me like super excited. I think my head kind of exploded about thinking of all the possibilities of projects that I could be doing and would be conducting.
Did you go on any co-pilots?
Yeah, I did. That was also a very surreal moment, the moment where you get asked, would you like to be a co-pilot? And I was like, okay, so I had this amazing co-pilot. We went to Halley Research Station. So it was like the last station on the list. I'd been like really luckily managed to go to the other stations on the James Clark Ross on my voyage down. And then this co-pilot opportunity became available. And yeah, got to be in the plane with the pilot for 8 hours solid of flying from Rotherham to Halley, where we went to pick up the last 4 summer station personnel that had shut down the station. Then we brought them back. And the pilot actually gives you controls of the planes as well. Like, he's still very much overseeing you and watching you. But Ian Potten, an absolute legendary pilot of the British Antarctic Survey who has just retired, says to you, okay, you now have control. And then that's you. You're in the air at 11,000 feet and you're flying an aircraft towards the Brunt ice shelf. Absolutely insane.
Tell me about the winter trips you went on at Rotherham.
Oh, this was actually pretty life-changing. I think I've always known that I really loved the outdoors, but doing things that were more like achievable and reasonable that you could, like, growing up in the Chiltern Hills in Buckinghamshire, like going cycling, walking, running, swimming. But this was now a completely new world where we were guided by field guides and introduced into new skills for me, such as like climbing with ice axes, walking with crampons, pulling sledges. So super luckily, in each winter, we get 2 weeks each with a field guide. My most memorable of the 4 trips was a hauling trip that I did with my field guide, who was with me at the time, called Ed Luke, and we both had 100 kilo pulk each, which essentially is a sledge that you have attached to your waist. And we were moving with skis and skins attached to the base of them to a specific location. And we set up camp at an area. We then got stuck in the tent for 4 days because the weather was so bad. I don't normally like sitting still for too long, so it was quite a good insight into, when you're really stuck and you really can't go anywhere, like how to be satisfied with your own company and without doing something that's necessary, like an active task. So that was super cool.
So after 2 winters at Rotherham, 3 summers at Rotherham, followed by 12 months working in Cambridge, you now find yourself here with me and everybody else here at King Edward Point. How on earth has that come about?
So I'm part of what's called the Antarctic Employment Pool, essentially people that work on Antarctic research stations are on temporary contracts. We don't have permanent contracts. We would go down for, you know, either 6 to 18 months in a specific job. But then after that, we're kept in this pool. So if they need somebody last minute, or someone was to drop out, or there was to be a problem on station, they need a filler, they can call on these people within the Antarctic employment pool. And that's exactly what happened. And I found out in just at the end of February, when I was completing my lab work in Lancaster, I remember getting the email. And then I was asked if I'd be ready to be deployed on the 20th of May. So I had, 2.5 months notice, which was pretty good. I've known people in the Antarctic employment pool that have had significantly less, like 10 days.
And after your time here at KEP, what's next for you?
I'm actually leaving the British Antarctic Survey, but do not worry, the Ice World podcast will continue. And I'm going to start a master's in statistics, ecological statistics, at the University of Glasgow. So I'm going to be moving to Scotland, and I really want to hone in a very important skill set that will help me hopefully move into doing a PhD later. And then, we'll see where life takes me.
And the final question I'd like to ask you, you've just mentioned that you are moving on from the British Antarctic Survey. What are you going to miss most about living and working on Antarctic research stations?
Oh, so the people is definitely the one. Being in a small community and cooking with people, having dinner with them, walking with them, talking with them, just going to knock on their door opposite you if you want to ask them a question, having them so close to you and sharing amazing experiences will be a big thing. I'm also going to really miss those Antarctic wow moments, as they've been termed by people that I've wintered with before, where you could be doing something like, let's say you're typing up data on the computer and someone will come in and they'll say, oh, look at the moon outside. And that's that moment where you just forget what you're doing and you run outside and you see this like amazing moon and you're standing on the balcony at the back of the lab with your cup of tea, watching this moon against like a purple and blue sky. Or you get a radio call and it's like there's humpback whales feeding around the point, and you, again, drop what you're doing if you can and get to a point where you're just watching these humpback whales.
Well, Naz, thank you very much for allowing me to host this episode and interview you. Like I said, I've been wanting to do it for such a long time, and you've got such an incredible story and you talk so well. And I think having listened to you interview so many other people, it was only fair that you sat on the other side of the table and told your story to everybody that listens.
Thanks for making me do it. Thanks for being interested. And it's been really cool, actually, despite the apprehensions, to sit on the other side of the microphone. So thank you.
Thank you, Nadia.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Ice World podcast, please do subscribe. It is super important to build our listenership, and it really does make a difference. If you're interested in working in Antarctica, also check out the job section on the British Antarctic Survey website, where jobs are regularly posted. See you next time for a new series of the Ice World podcast. We'll be moving on to series 4.